on day three of the TAOM, and this is going to be a full day. We're just getting started. I'm going to be going into the Aussie Wind Lecture here shortly, but I happen to run into Craig Fusoletti.
Filicetti.
Filicetti, yeah.
That's
how about
good.
Just Craig?
That's good.
There we go. With Pro Mystic. And I've got some of the stuff, and you guys should also. Craig, welcome to Houston.
Thanks. That's my first time here.
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you go to the conventions like this, you really don't get to get out. You stay in the hotel. You may as well be in the airport.
That's true, yes.
So you really haven't had a chance to get out and enjoy the barbecue and the sights and everything, have you?
No, not at all. We did have some Mexican food last night.
Oh, you did? Well, there
it
you go.
It was good.
It's a local flavor then, of course. Now, you got just some of the coolest products that are, like the batteries that you put inside there, they last like a lifetime, basically, or something. Tell me something about how that you have engineered the batteries.
Yeah, it's really more about power management than it is about batteries.
Okay.
The battery technologies get more and more advanced, mm-hmm. but it's your use of the available power that really makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So using the lowest power, methods for... Mm-hmm. gathering the information you need and sending it the way you need to send it. That's what it's really, that's really the trick.
Okay. And some of the things, of course, are using like smaller watch batteries, but the things you have sealed and everything,
mm-hmm.
once you buy that those can't really be replaced.
That's right. Yeah, those can't be replaced. So I do offer, replacement programs.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like, a prorated rate on those.
Sure.
So you can get something for less than the original amount.
It kind of reminds me that I had purchased a reel from Paul Diamond many years ago, and he always said that this reel is guaranteed for life, either mine or yours, whichever comes first,
That's
and
right.
I recently had a reel that went bad, and I called him and said, my eyesight's not like it used to be, so it's it's not guaranteed any longer. So I hope you live many long years.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah. So I plan to be around for a while. So
tell me about something new. What you got this year showing over in your dealer room?
Probably the newest thing that we have is Evolution, and we released that back in July, and it's been getting fantastic reviews. It's probably the biggest release that we've had, and it's probably getting the most rave reviews, I would say.
Tell me what's the effect.
Well, it's really, the only way to really describe it is that it is a tool that will allow you to do a lot of different things. Everything from doing psychometry, it allows you to track objects, basically, in a way that you've never been able to track them before. So you can track paper bags if you want to do a psychometry. You can track chairs if you want to know who sat in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
You can track different objects if you want to know who's holding onto an object or what pocket they put it into.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it touches on a whole bunch of different effects that you can achieve with this one device. And it allows you to track. You can buy it with either three tags or with five tags, so you can track three items or five items.
Wow.
And it's in a way that it's really never been seen before. So you'll have to look at the videos and see it. It doesn't do it justice. When people get it, the running joke is that after you get it, you're going to have several sleepless nights where your brain will not stop working. And
thinking of all kinds of ideas.
Yep, exactly.
Is the thing small enough, I guess, that it can be put pretty much any place?
It's small, but it's very thin.
That's
the
important thing.
Yeah. So you can put it into a sheet of cardboard if you want to track, or a whiteboard if you want to know what whiteboard somebody lifted off the table and looked at. For example, it's very thin, and it can actually be sized to be something that is small as well, the size of maybe a silver dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So it is small, but it's only about 2 millimeters thick. So that makes it very placeable.
And it's called what again?
It's called Evolution.
And so you can see that video on the website, which is?
Yep, there's two websites, which is www.promystic.com, and there's two videos up there that you can see.
Okay. Very good. That's Craig Filicetti. Thank you very much, Craig. Hope you enjoy Houston, get to come back again and spend a little bit more time.
Yep, definitely.
And thank you very much. So, from the TAOM on day three, Scotty out. Well, now it's afternoon, and we are still into day three of the TAOM, and we just finished, I believe, with the gambling presentation with, who was that, Jason England, I believe, Paul Wilson, and some of the dealers are taking a break, and I'm taking a break with Losander, one of the most popular dealers right here, at least one of my favorites. Hello, Losander, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Great.
Thank you.
And you have been coming to the TAOM for a few years. You must really like us.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. The first time I was actually there last year.
Well, there was. I thought you'd been here before then.
No. Last year was my first time.
I'll be doggone. Yeah. And you did so well, you want to come back again then this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, last year, there was San Antonio. You and I were working together at the MAAS convention, and you left early to go come back, and I was still hanging out there.
Right.
Did you just perform as a dealer, or did you have a performance? What did you do last year in San Antonio?
Last year, I did also perform.
Oh, you did as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this year, because you're going to be performing, lecturing, and a dealer.
And a dealer.
Different show? Kind of a thing that you're doing this year? Or
no.
Nope, same thing?
It's the same thing. So.
Okay. Yeah, because we got a lot of people from the public, you know, and selling public tickets. Last evening, we had, I think, a sellout crowd of over 400 people from the public. You know,
wow, that's great.
Yeah, so we're expecting, you know, that again, because we really had some good promotion and everything for this. Now, I know you're going to be lecturing tomorrow morning, Monday morning, but you had heard your lecture at the Midwest Magic Jubilee here just recently, which was really well received, and I love the ideas of you know, the bubbles and everything. How did you come up with the bubble formula? Was that something that did DeFinjon show you, or some of that, or was that
no? I mean, I learned the basics of the bubble magic from DeFinjon at the beginning, and I ordered always his bubble liquid, and then after a while, I experimented around, and then all of a sudden I found this special shampoo in Germany, which was called Planchi. And that worked great for a long, long time until they discontinued that item. So, and then I had to find another one, which I'm using right now, and they discontinued the item too, but I still have enough. So as long as I have it, I'm going to be good.
Last. Okay.
I'll be right back to grab a tap from y'all, okay?
All right. And so, yeah, as long as they continue to make that, you're going to be good. Otherwise, you're going to have to start making your own or something, or maybe talk with some mad scientist. Or so you're selling the loops as well as the bubble magic juice and everything.
Yes, everything.
What kinds of new ideas? Tell me about the Houdini seance. Is it the Houdini seance thing? I think that's what
you're
saying.
Yeah, it's like called the Sun Portal. Mm-hmm. And basically is a frame. On one side you see the picture of Houdini, mm-hmm. and on the other side there's a little door which you can open. Underneath there's a slate and mm-hmm. a chalk hanging on a string. And so I'm telling the story how he tried to contact the dead, and by explaining how he did that, basically I'm asking somebody in the audience to visualize a number, and then basically the frame starts floating, and when it finished floating, you open the door and the number is on the chalkboard. But it can be anything. It can be a drawing, it can be initials, it can be your imagination is the limit. You know?
Right. Now, was this just a natural variation of that one? It seems like you had a smaller box or something that floated.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Yes.
The box, the gimmick, everything was like permanently attached to.
Yes.
Here you can actually remove the gimmick altogether. Oh. But at the beginning, it's part of the frame, so you don't need to fumble or look for it.
Right.
But then at the end, you're completely clean. Mm-hmm. The frame's technically almost examinable, but you wouldn't do that because it's too light. You
know? Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's almost examinable. And when you're coming up with the different ideas and creating these things, is it something that you, like in that case with the Houdini thing, did that start with this other smaller box and you thought, well, what more can I do with it, or how can I make it larger for stage, or what was
a friend of mine, he had the idea, like saying, you know, it would be good maybe to float like these spirit slates. And then I was thinking, well, it's actually a good idea, but then I was thinking, well, they're usually two, how do I connect them and whatever.
Right.
And then one day I was driving and I got the idea, why not make something like that? Mm-hmm. And then it all made sense. And once this developed in my head, I built the first prototype in like 4 hours, you know? And that's it.
Now, when you started building, were you a woodworker? Were you a craftsman? Or how did you start to...
No, but I learned... my original knowledge was in the... Yeah, originally I learned something out of the electronic business, but 2 years of my, how would you name it here, it's almost like apprenticeship.
Okay.
Over there, it's a little bit of a different system how you learn, you know. So my whole thing was 3.5 years, but 2 years of it was like working with metal a lot. Mm-hmm. And working with metal is similar to wood, so.
And when you're working with metal, you mean like shiny metal, not like... tin or something?
No, like aluminum and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's part of your what you learn when you build like a computer. You know, there's also, of course, metal parts, and so you learn all of that.
Right.
And then from that, I got a pretty good knowledge, and I applied it for wood, you know, and then that's how it started. But my father, he comes out of a carpenter family, so he also helps me building the tables and the frames. I'm building by myself.
So he had a pretty good workshop, I guess, then to begin with, all the tools and everything that your dad had.
So
he kind of passed this on to you, and you work with him and as well.
Right.
Now, and we're in Germany. Where are you from?
He lives close to Frankfurt.
Okay.
And it's like 80 kilometers, so how many miles is that? I don't know.
And you were born there as well?
Yes, I was born there.
Okay. Yeah. And then when did you move to the States?
About roughly 12 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you come to Vegas or were you someplace else first and then went
I came to Vegas.
Straight to Vegas. Why Las Vegas? I mean, it's sort of, I don't know, Los Angeles,
you know,
Chicago.
Luna's parents, I mean, Shimada, he was living there because he had a show.
Right.
And so naturally, I would just live there too.
Okay, well, yep, that makes sense. Yeah. And then you had to apply for citizenship and everything, I guess?
Yes.
Go through all that.
Well, I'm not a citizen yet, but I have a green card.
Okay.
And I want to become an American citizen, but I don't want to lose my German passport. Mm-hmm. And I have to try and figure out how I can still keep that because they really don't allow dual citizenship.
But Germany does not.
No. But there is a way to do it. You have to have a good reason and so on. And then, I mean, I have still two kids in Germany, so I think that's probably reason enough to keep my passport.
Yeah,
but for now, I still only have the green card.
Now, in getting your citizenship here, do you have to go through some sort of classes and then pass a test and something?
You have to learn. So. I don't know. It comes with a little book. You have to learn all these questions. And
about Congress and everything. How the government works and everything to be a voting member here.
Right.
But do you have to go back then to Germany like so many months out of the year? Or
No. I can stay here for as long as I want.
Oh, you can?
Yeah,
okay.
Already with a green card. As a matter of fact, it's the other way around. If I leave too long, then that's not good.
Oh, then you have to come back and apply again.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's up. You can leave up to a year, but then it gets really complicated. If you want to leave longer, it's complicated. But I don't want to leave
There's
longer.
There's no reason for longer here. You'd rather stay here,
That's right.
Okay. Okay. So you really like Las Vegas, I guess? I mean, you travel all over, obviously, you know, the world.
It's good for me, 10 minutes to the airport, and I have to fly a lot anyway, so...
Yeah. But the weather, I mean, the temperature and the lack of humidity is so different from Frankfurt. I mean, I've been to Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was shocked when I arrived here, actually.
I bet you were. Oh,
like
in Houston,
so
yeah.
humid here.
Yeah, yeah. It's hot. It's like, wait a minute, I'm used to heat, but this
like,
is...
This is a different type
kind of
heat.
Yeah. People who live here couldn't live in Vegas and vice versa, I think, or something.
Well, you have to get used to it.
Whatever you get used to. And so you're obviously used to Vegas, and you have no plans of ever leaving there. Yeah.
Not right now, and I'm also stuck with my house situation over there because I lost so much money during that crash.
I heard, I talked with different people who were saying that they had purchased homes in Vegas, and, you know, it was a good market, I guess, to invest in. And then when the crash happened, I mean, it just fell bad.
I mean, my house was originally worth, at one point, I bought it for like $300,000, but at one point it was worth $500,000, and now it's worth $160,000.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I was talking with someone in Vegas who was passing by this house every day, and he always, really loved it. And as they were building it, he talked with the builder and said he was interested in buying it. And they said, well, no, because this is not a spec home, somebody else.
Right.
And it was going for like, $2.5 million or something, And long story short, it's after the crash, I guess, then it went down to like 1.2 or something like half price. And and the guy was getting rid of it, he was having problems. And so this guy said, I'll make you an offer.
So
he got his dream home.
It's fantastic. For people who want to buy, it's a good time.
It's a good
right
time
now.
To buy. Yes, that's right. But you got to stick with your house since you've invested in it. You got to wait till it starts to rebound a little bit. Well, do you see the economy? Hey, Bob. Do you see the economy starting to rebound in Vegas as well? Or?
Well, there is a slow increase, but I think it's not done yet. I think there's probably going to be another crash or something.
You think so?
I don't think. I can feel it. It's it's not over.
Yeah. So there's more downside to go, you think?
I think so, yeah.
You see people leaving town, or...
A lot of people have left, yeah.
Is that right?
I think there's at least 300,000 left from Vegas, because,
wow.
I mean, all these big hotels, they, you know, got rid of a lot of employees,
yes.
And you notice if you try to valet park your car, sometimes it takes half an hour before you get your car back, you know?
Yeah, so the service person in the industry, basically, hard to
what
get people...
What they really realized is when the main crash happened, they had to let go of some people, and then when it picked up again,
right.
They said, well, why should we replace them? It works without them.
Yeah, we can do without them.
you know what I mean?
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I noticed that Lake Mead, of course, has been really going down a lot. I mean, I go out there and visit from time to time, and that just seems to be such a sad thing. I mean, it's going down. The point being is, have you been hearing much about what's going on with that and how that's going to affect the flow of electricity and just the water to Las Vegas?
I haven't heard much about it.
Okay. Because I was thinking that was kind of, I've heard some doom and gloom. It's like you've only got another 20 years and then it's going to be a desert.
Well,
again.
I definitely sell my house before that happens because I guess I'm permanently stuck there.
That's right. Even some place where you won't be able to turn on the lights because there's no power.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I hope that the economy turns around. You know, it seemed that a lot of magicians had moved from Los Angeles, you know, to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And so there were just a lot of good jobs, I guess, with trade shows and just people, you know, high rollers coming in. And then as that kind of started to fall off, do you think that there are still too many magicians or not enough work to go around for everybody?
I think it's a big misconception for the magicians to think that they go to Vegas and get work because there is no work.
Okay.
No. I mean, unless you have a signed contract and probably already the money in your pocket, because
even
a signed contract can be canceled. But it's no point in going to Vegas, you know, unless you love Vegas and want to be there. But you get way more work anywhere else in the United States. Yeah,
interesting. So it's better to be somewhere else. And if someone books you in Vegas,
I was performing there for a while in this place called Hofbräu House.
Oh, sure, I love the Hofbräu.
Yeah,
every time I go, I always make sure to go to Hofbräu House because I love.
So I got paid really good money.
Yeah.
And I also received a lot of tips by working there, and they were very happy with me. After 6 weeks, they said, well, we have to let you go. I said, why? Did something happen?
6 weeks? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. They said, there's a magician coming and works for free now.
Oh, man.
So you see, we're destroying our own market by doing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, you know. Nobody wants to work in one place forever anyway, but I think it's very important that we try to keep the prices up, you know. I mean,
rather than trying to undercut
each other.
You know,
yeah,
this is big cannibals eating each other.
Yeah, it's really stupid, and, you know, it's not nice to just live from tips, you know. You can, but...
Do you see that type of predator activity, perhaps, well, you haven't been around a lot of other cities, but I would think more in Las Vegas because you have a lot of guys, and they say, oh, that must be a place to work because they've already got a magician. I'll go in and try to take his job.
Right.
All right, well, for some reason, it looks like that we lost a little bit of our conversation as we were talking. Just realized after we got on long, a little bit long that we missed out on some of that. We'll try to backtrack a little bit because, gosh, you missed out on a great conversation. my battery's getting weak. Perhaps that may have something to do with it there. Anyhow, the thing we were just finishing up over there, that, yeah, there are predatory magicians, and I don't think just in Las Vegas, but every place, you know, which they kind of go out and try to look at guys that, to say, okay, well, they're already hiring a magician. I think I could do something better than that. And so it's horrible to think that somebody had gone in and said, I'll do it for free. And they were just working for tips, I guess.
They were working for tips, and they're hurting everybody. Because, you know, when a price is established, you don't want to work in that show forever anyway. So sooner or later, you leave and somebody else comes in and he gets the same price paid. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Naturally. So, but if people undercut each other, then you end up with only tips, you know, and that's not
right.
Good for nobody. You
right.
know?
Exactly. Right.
Because
exactly.
you get treated completely different. You know, you charge more, you get treated better.
Right. And the more you charge, and as you were saying that, I think for some place we might have lost out on this.
Lost out
you
on
were,
it. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
when you were charging.
Yeah, I said, yeah, in Germany I started off charging about $300 per show.
Yeah.
And they treated me a certain way. And then after a while I raised my prices and charged between 1,000, 1,500 or so. All of a sudden, you know, you come there, oh, here, Mr. Lausanne, here's your dressing room, here's this, here's that. You know, everything's taken care of. Do you need anything else? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would have never happened when I was charging $300.
Right. You
know, so here, there's your spot. Do your magic, you know?
Yeah. Because that's the perceived value of what they're getting back out of that.
Absolutely,
And if, so if they perceive you and they actually indeed pay you more, then they think, okay, well, we need to give somebody more. You know, that I think that even some people who are well-known, if they do something for free, you know, then they're going to be saying, okay, well, they're going to be given a little bit less, then, too. But one of the things I was saying, I'll repeat again here, that didn't get recorded, was like working in a shopping mall, and I was being paid by the shopping mall. They paid me well. However, whenever I was performing, that people were going by and saying, well, here, Johnny, you know, just watch a magician. I'm going to go shopping for a while. Yeah. So their perceived value was, I'm not paying anything. I'm not investing anything, so it must not be worth anything.
Absolutely.
And so it wasn't like I'm going to be getting more shows out of this either.
No.
Because, you know, I think free
shows. It's like
shows,
a throwaway, you know?
Yeah. Free shows beget free shows, though, also. You
That's
know,
right.
A lot of times. So I think it's important, to keep a standard. And part of this is, of course, this is a fun industry, as you know, because you're selling to, as well as not only professionals, but you sell professional equipment to non-professionals or amateur collectors or whatever then, too.
Yeah.
And so some of these guys who may not be depending upon trying to, you know, pay for their rent are just, you know, doing some shows saying, I'll work wherever for free or whatever,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
And that undercuts the market, you know, for some people who are trying to make a living out of this. You know?
Exactly.
Because everybody's trying to find experience someplace.
Yes.
You know?
And there's nothing wrong with it, but, you know, at one point when you reach a certain level, you have to charge for your magic properly, you know what I mean?
Well, that's a very good point. You know, and so a question would be, how did you decide that you went from 300 to 1,500? Did you feel that your show got better or that...
Yeah, I felt my show got better, and I was at the beginning, I was mainly doing like... kids' parties and stuff like that, right?
Yeah,
so
there
was naturally a limit.
Sure,
I mean, nobody's going to pay you $1,000 for a kids' party.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, really rich, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So one day, I did my first evening show for adults, you know, and it played really well, and I was still charging $300, and I did more of those and still charging $300, and then all of a sudden, I got booked by Leica Camera, you know, do a trade show.
Okay.
And then there were people there. They were, of course, rich, you know. So I said, the show was $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same show, you know. And they said, $1,500, no problem. Once I did that, I was always hired back to people who were willing to pay $1,500. Because when you work on a party where you get paid $1,500, there's only people who can pay $1,500. There's nobody there who has no money. You know what I mean?
Good point, yeah. Birds of a feather flock together.
They're surrounded by rich people.
Sure.
So you get handed around. You go from one party to the next. If they like you, of course, you don't even need to advertise anymore. And the price is already established because they asked their friend who booked me and said, hey, how much you pay? And they said, $1,500. So
That's why you have to have a good and if you do give them a better deal, you're going to say, well, tell them my regular, if anybody asks, my regular fee is this. I'll do it for you for $1,000, right. Normally $1,500.
Well, what I did like a little trick. I said, I have three different shows. Because I did not want to lose all the other market. So I said, I have a show, it starts with $800, and I have a show, it's like $1,000, and I have a show, $1,500. So even if these shows were not much different, but they don't... Yeah. Even if they see these shows are not... I mean, the show can even be the same, but you say it's a different show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that helps you kind of like dividing it a little bit, you know? And then if they say, why did you charge him $800? I said, oh, that was a different show. It was cheaper. You want a cheaper show? No. I want,
I want the best show.
I want the best show. Exactly, yeah.
Well, there's also something to talk about the perceived value that people like to talk about how much they spend for something. You know, like a lady varies a lot for a pair of shoes. You know, somebody has a nice car or they got, you know, a new tie or whatever. So, that was a $150 tie, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that there is something about that as well, that is a perceived value of something that they had paid, and so they like to tell their friends, oh yeah, well, we hired this magician, he was $1,500, just kind of as an aside.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, well, I want to be like her or have a party, you know, like theirs, and so I better get him and hire, you know, them at that price then too.
Yeah. So, I had a friend in Germany, he was even more high priced than I was. He charged like anywhere between like $5,000 and $6,000 a show.
Yeah.
And every once in a while people call him up, oh, that's quite expensive, you know.
Yeah.
I hired a magician that was only $300.
Yeah.
I said, sure, if you want, I can find you a magician who costs only $100 and he cleans the dishes afterwards too. I just don't know if you want to see his show.
He said, you know? That is a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that just got on earlier that or we lost out on the conversation, so I might edit this back out, but on Facebook I had heard where that someone had said that they were wanting to hire a band for a six-piece yes. band. The band said, you know, charge a certain price. They said, just for music? They said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you contact plumbers and find, you know, contact six plumbers and find out how much they charge on a Saturday night to stay past midnight
exactly.
to work on that.
Yeah.
And whatever they charge, I'll charge you half.
Right. Exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, your meal is here, so I'm going to let you go ahead and eat, and I thank you very much, and,
thank you.
Dirk, for talking with us. I may have asked you this before. I think I know we talked on several other occasions about your magic. This is called The Magic Words, my podcast. What is your magic word? What is your credo? What do you live by?
My magic word?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't thought about that.
Okay. What is something that is that means something to you, you know, that you live by, you know, code?
You know, I think my philosophy is always try to give more than I receive, you know.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Give more than you receive.
Yes.
That's great. Thank you very much. I'm going to let you go ahead and eat then for now. That was Losander. Scotty out. Well, we've just finished the afternoon close-up, professional close-up show, and now we're in the dealer's room over here, just kind of mingling around with a few people. Some people have gone out to dinner, and I'm here with a good friend, Oscar Munoz. Hey, Oscar.
Hey, guys. How you guys all doing?
Want just to kind of, we're not doing a real wrap, but, you know, this is the second full day, and we've had just a whole heck of a lot of stuff, and so we have, really, tonight is going to be the big stage show, and then we have two tremendous lectures coming up.
I'm looking for those lectures. I think they're going to be awesome lectures.
Talk about this.
Well, I mean, you got great guard guys. Those
Michael Weber, first of all.
Michael Weber, and then we got Daniel Ortiz and
Christian England.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a really good for those of you out there who didn't make it to AUM. I think you're going to miss out on a lot of knowledge that's going to be
exactly. There have been just some really good lectures already. You know, with Ossie Wynn and Chad Long and Mark Mason, and on and on and on.
I found Ossie Wynn's lecture was really informative. I mean, strong material. Yes, very, very. I mean, even last night did that stuff that normally has been done close-up. He did a stage act with his close-up, and I thought it was really awesome.
Yeah, and could show how that you can convert one thing small into making it really play big.
Right, right.
And a lot of clever ideas. And one thing he was teaching in his lecture was the Berglas effect of any card at any number.
Right,
you know,
it was clever idea. And you know, for those of them, for those people who use memorized decks, I think this is a little simpler. I would do it. Nobody would take a lot of work.
It'd take a lot of work.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I understand you have it, or you were doing it.
I was fiddling with that. Yeah, but I think there are other methods I could do that rather than what he's got. Everyone's got their own method, I think.
I think so.
That works for them. Then tonight's show ought to be pretty good. I understand a few things happen. First of all, that Chris Kenner couldn't come because, he is in the hospital, got hospitalized or something. I think he is ill.
Oh, no. I didn't hear this.
And, okay, well, this is fresh news then for the Magic Newswire. And I understand Rudy Kobe got scratched because I think his mother was ill, so he couldn't come.
Oh, that's sad.
And then I just heard 15 minutes ago that Bob Carlbach just passed away.
What?
Yeah. That, you know, Bob had been ill and been, I think, kind of institutionalized for a while, and so he just died. Dal Sanders just passed that on to me a short time ago.
That's sad. We have so many people living this world. I mean, Bob Carlbach, a strong person in the community, in the magic community.
He really was, you know, quite a strong force, very well put. You know, for so many years he was the one who was kind of the coordinating all the lectures for all the guys. You know, if there was a magician who wanted to lecture, that he was the one who set him up. And it wasn't like, you know, do you guys want to take this guy? He would call you up and say, okay,
right,
this guy's coming to your town and to lecture. And he would set things up on the airlines with Southwest.
Yeah.
And they'd just go from city to city, and these guys would go and pick him up. And back then, I think it was just kind of around Texas and Oklahoma and New Orleans, you know, just around the different, maybe about 6 or 8 cities, something like that.
And wasn't Bob a salesman, door-to-door salesman at one time?
He was a hardware salesman.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Bob used to do some stuff for hardware shows.
Right.
And, you know, he had told me many years ago that his issue was that he could no longer perform magic full-time because apparently he got stage fright at some point, and he said he could never go back and do it again because I think it was affecting him physically. But the reason that he started working, I think, for this one hardware company was that he was doing some magic, I think, for the trade show, and they liked him enough to hire him full-time. So he started doing that on a regular basis, you know, with the company, the hardware company.
That's really sad. That's really sad that Bob passed on. I mean, I guess we're all heading that way, but hopefully not as soon as we wish.
Exactly. You know. I'm not sure how old he was. I got to say he's got to have been pushing 80 or something. But anyhow, just it was just a few years ago that we had Roger Klaus, who had died during the TAOM.
Right.
You know, now Bob Carlbach was a past president of the TAOM also.
Right.
And for him to die during the weekend of the TAOM, and it makes you almost wonder about how serendipitous that was for him perhaps to have held off for this long.
Yeah, I think, when God calls me up, I'm going to say, you can't. I got to go to TAOM first.
I got one more show. Yeah.
You know? And, magic is my life. I mean, there's a play in Broadway. It's called, well, it wasn't Broadway, called Chorus Line. And there, the dancer falls and breaks his leg and, you know, and he sings a song, What I Did for Love. And you always wonder, you know, that this is what I do for love is magic. And you always wonder, you know, what would happen if something would happen with my hand or can't stand up and perform, and would I still carry on that love of magic and the torch of magic to make people laugh and enjoy. So,
well, look at what Wayne Dobson,
yeah, sure. Wasn't he slated to come out to TAOM?
He was at one point. We talked to him, and he would come here at any time.
Sure.
He has a special affinity for the TAOM and has attended as many of these as he could. There's a guy, you know, who seems to be getting worse and worse, but his
love
and
persistence
for life
and keeps
magic
him in,
keeps him healthier. You know?
I ran into Wayne, I believe it was in the UK, in Sandy's convention.
Yeah.
Yeah, and was, you know, he was looking forward to being out here and stuff, and so, I mean, but he's still out there trying to make a living, and it's amazing what he can do in a wheelchair, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and he had the people rolling and laughing, and it's, you know. So when you got it in your system, got it in your blood, I'll tell you what, you can do everything.
Do it? Yep, that's true. But, you know, talking about Bob Carlbach, and I was just thinking about, you know, I'd been to Colon, Michigan for the Habits Get Together. One of the things they do now that Alley Only takes people on the cemetery tour. I don't know if you would take
no,
a tour.
I've never
quite interesting of all the dozens of magicians who are out there, and he, you know, goes through and talks about their lives and some of the things, and apparently that to have a plot at the Colon Cemetery was reserved only for those who are Colon residents, but apparently there were enough people who wanted to be interred there, had petitioned the board, or the chamber,
board.
City,
yeah.
City, and so they opened up, I don't know, however many hundred of these, and so they said now that if you live there, it's $375 for a plot, or $500 if you don't. So, you know, there are people who are outside, like you and me, could go there. So have you ever thought about, number one, where you would want to be to spend?
Well, actually, in eternity, you said that because a friend of my wife just passed on like 2 days ago. She's a teacher. Those are things you don't really want to talk about, but I guess we all have to at one point in our lives. But I told my wife, if something happens to me, sell the magic and get out of Dodge. And I want to be cremated. So, and spread my ashes somewhere where, you know, we pick later on in our lives.
All in one place?
all over. That's because I've seen the world, and I loved every part, every place I've gone. So,
so you like to have some ashes and put everybody?
Everywhere, yeah.
That's what I'm doing with my dad's ashes, actually.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am. I've got a little tube, and I kind of scoop them up, and whenever we travel or if I'm on a cruise ship or something.
That's awesome.
Because he'd worked on a cruise ship, you know, for a while, and he loved golf, so I sprinkle some ashes, you know, and in Scotland on one of the golf course tee boxes, and he loved to fish, and so there's a salmon place, you know, different places around the world. Whenever I travel, I take a little bit of pop with me and drop them off around the way.
That's awesome that you remember him wherever you go. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, that's what I want. I want, you know, the Magic Committee has been really good to me and has really accepted me into the, you know, into the world of magic.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that'd be a great idea.
But so you really haven't thought about having a headstone or being as far as a place for to memorialize you, even though you may not be buried there. If you would, what would be your tombstone?
What would be your tombstone?
I want pepperoni.
Gosh.
No, what do you want for your tombstone?
Oh, gosh. Where's Pepe?
Yeah, where's Pepe? Yeah. Where's Pepe?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, where's Pepe?
The
Chihuahua dog.
I always thought I'd like shaken but not stirred.
Right. No, mine is where's Pepe? You know, my sidekick. You got to go with me.
Exactly. Yep, wherever you go. Well, it is getting towards the end of the TOM, but we're not burying this yet by any means.
No, I think it's a challenge. It's good. I think people are enjoying it.
Absolutely.
You know what I really like to see? I saw is that we had a lot younger kids in the audience.
Yeah.
Young attendant, you know, and I thought that was a really good, strong thing is that we have a lot of young kids. From other conventions that I've been at, they're, you know, older people.
Sure.
You know, so,
there's a good mix here. And, you know, it is noticeable mix.
Right.
I've heard Joshua Jay and Scott Hollingsworth and others who have told me that same thing, that what I like about this convention is that very thing. That you see a lot of these guys who are sitting around the table and, you know, flicking fingers, you know, like that we used to do when you were younger.
Right.
And now they're doing it and creating these important friendships they'll carry on, you know,
probably,
through life
and
continue, hopefully, to keep this tradition of conventions alive. But this has just been a fabulous convention, I think, you know, as far as, gosh, the talent, you know, I think Alex and Danny have put together just had a bunch of their friends come. It's just been
I think everybody, I mean, and I think we need more of that. I mean, we need more people, the young folk, that's what's going to carry on the legacy magic. And I think Danny and Alex and all those guys put it together. They did a great job.
Yep, absolutely. And it's been a lot of fun. You know, the one thing that I have heard most about the convention are just the schedule changes. But I was talking to Michael Weber about that, and he said that what he's been hearing is not so much that there have been any problems with that, where people were upset. It's just, in a way, it's almost kind of fun. It's like, you know, what's happening? Is it really going to happen? Or, you know, created surprises.
Right, they did. And
through the changes.
And also keeps people alert because, I mean, they got to check their scheduling instead of, you know, like, oh, he's next. Oh, well, I'll wait. Oh, is he next? Oh, maybe I should go. And I think it forces people to, you know, at least pay more attention to the scheduling and to show up to the shows.
And, you know, I think it also goes to the relevancy of the guidebook that we've been using you know, throughout this, because as things have been changing, that they have been changed on the spot. So anybody who wants to
with the smartphone applications and all that, I think
you know immediately which room to go to now,
right, exactly.
Or if this has been switched or whatever.
Right.
So you can kind of keep up to date with what's going to be going on, because when you put something in the printed schedule,
things happen. Yeah, things happen, and
they've all been for the better.
It's
not like something happened or whatever that's been bad. Everything's been good all along. It's all
right.
Good.
So I think they did a great job putting it together.
Yeah.
So hopefully this will be carried on to Dallas. Now, my understanding, when is next TM convention? Is it going to be in Dallas?
That's correct. Yep.
Awesome.
Are you signed up?
Not yet. God knows where it has me next year. So I'm a true TOM at heart magician. So if I have a chance, I'll drive out there to Dallas and see all my friends again. That's what I like about these conventions, especially in Texas.
Right.
I mean, so I was talking with Michael Dardant, and Michael said the first time he saw me was at a TOM convention. He was, you know, I was honored that you see him now coming up in the ranks as one of the, you know, next.
He's got a real shot, I think, also at the contest.
Well, I think
taking away the $5,000.
I think he's funny. He's a well-rounded entertainer. Yeah, well-rounded entertainer. He knows my theory of magic is not about the trick; it's about you, and he really shows it. I mean, he sells it because he sells himself, you know, and the trick just secondary.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He knows the secret of
right.
magic, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we just have a few more things yet to do. Again, the main stage show tonight, which would be great, and then a couple lectures that Oscar mentioned, and then tomorrow morning, pretty much, I think, Los Sanders' lecture will be the last to wrap up. I just had dinner with Los Sanders earlier and was chatting with him about a variety of things, so he's anxious to get
share
there tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think all the dealers have been fairly happy also. Because it's been pretty steady as far as the business goes, and they got a nice feel and vibe, you know, and we're sitting here in the dealer's room right now, and, you know, the nice sitting area, and everybody kind of sessioning around, and of course now it's dinner hour, but even at dinner hour, this place has got to have
pretty,
at least 100
much,
people in here.
Even, you know, people have gone out, and the cool thing about where they had it is that if you want to walk a block and a half or two blocks, you go to a restaurant, you can, you know, it's not that expensive. If you're going to stick here around in the hotel room, it's quite different, you know.
Yeah.
And so
it's quite a bit different, certainly. You know, in the past, we've had some problems downtown that we have had some issues in which that because it's Labor Day weekend that some of the restaurants have been closed because of the holiday weekend. But it seems like that we have had more restaurants that have opened in Houston and are staying open now through the holiday weekend, too. So just as you say, you know, there are other places to go, you know.
Right.
Because we are right in the heart of downtown here at
Right.
America. So.
Very safe at night. It's a great place.
It really is. Good choice of hotel and everything all around. All right. Well, Oscar, I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you helping me with this kind of a mini wrap or a pre-wrap, I guess,
for
the convention
Scott.
Over there.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
You bet. That was Oscar Munoz. For now, this is Scotty out. Well, we're still in day three of the Texas Association of Magician Annual Convention, and I'm in the dealer's room then again, and this is after the show has completed, and I'm sitting at the booth with Richard Kaufman. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Thanks a lot. And that we're sitting here behind you, the Genie booth, and I'm looking at this 3D picture of David Berglas. I know the glasses come with that, but that's just kind of freaky looking without the glasses. Over there. Wow.
Well, it's just kind of a blur.
It does kind of look. It's kind of weird. Now, you have attended the TOM in many years past, I know.
Yes. I like the TOM very much.
You always have a lot of good attendance, and everybody seems to have pretty good sales. I think all the dealers seem to be fairly happy.
Yes. I did very nicely this year.
Good. Now, how many years have you been operating Genie?
I bought Genie in October of 1998 from Irene Larson.
Okay.
Our first issue was published in January of 1999. So this is our 14th year. We're finishing our 14th year or our 15th year. Frankly, I've lost count. But what I do know is that this year is the 75th anniversary of Genie. We're up to volume 75, and it was founded in 1936 by William Larson Sr., who was an attorney in Los Angeles.
And it was called Genie with spelled with two I's rather than I-E because it was after the Gen, number two, kind of?
No. William Larson Sr. liked the way the two lowercase I's looked beside one another. The spelling of Genie, G-E-N-I-I, is actually the plural of Genie, G-E-N-I-E.
Oh, really? So it wouldn't be Genies. Okay, it would be Genie. Or do they pronounce it?
We pronounce it Genie. It can also be pronounced Genie. And Genie-I is yet another correct pronunciation, but we say Genie.
Okay.
And I am the Genie.
Well, I had thought before about it was just the second, or rather the reinvention of the Gen magazine, but it had nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with that. No, Genie was started because when A.M. Wilson retired from the Sphinx, Bill Larson Sr. Expected to be able to purchase the Sphinx, and instead it was sold to John Mulholland. And because of that, Bill Larson Sr. started Genie as a direct result of the fact that he was not able to buy the Sphinx. If he had bought the Sphinx, then I would be publishing the Sphinx today, and the Sphinx would be celebrating its nearly 100th anniversary.
But the Sphinx has been reproduced, I believe. Hasn't that been reprinted?
It's been duplicated in digital form. It's 53 volumes, so it's too big to reprint physically.
Okay. And why was it that with, Well, why did you purchase Genie?
I purchased Genie because I'd been publishing books since 1977, found the book market declining because of home video and the simple lack of people, as many people reading. And I felt that Genie would be a new direction for me to take, and that things I had done prior to that in my life would enable me to take on the task of being the editor and publisher of Genie, a writer, illustrator, designer. I know many people, had a lot of contacts. Have a talent for talking people into publishing things they really don't want to publish. All of those things are very handy. Of course, I had no idea what I was getting into, and the first year, if you go back and look at the issues in 1999, there are a few very good issues, but there are also a few very mundane issues. It took a little while to figure out what was going on, but I think now we publish the largest independent magazine in magic, and a very high-quality magazine. We include the DVDs with it, tricks. We have an electronic, a digital edition of the magazine that's available on any platform, computer, desktop, laptop, smartphone, iPad, iPhone. Soon we'll have an Android app and a Kindle app. And that's free for all our subscribers every month. We don't charge extra for it.
Yeah.
And all 75 years of our back issues are available in electronic form, online, via searchable database, for our subscribers.
That's
so
awesome.
All of that comes, you know,
free with your subscription, your annual subscription.
That's right.
And your subscriptions are not just annual. You have 3 and 5 years, too.
Well, we do 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and lifetime.
Okay.
And we have about 77 lifetime subscribers now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good deal. You know, if you think you're going to live more than 20 years, it pays.
Yeah. You certainly think you will, and I'm sure you will. You're a young man. You have a long life in front of you.
Well, I'm 54, so.
Well, to me, that's young. Certainly.
Everything is relative.
That's right. Or we may be all relatives. So you have, I was going to ask you about the illustrations as well. Do you feel that with all the books you were illustrating and being one of my favorite artists, you've illustrated things so perfectly. It's great to go back, like with Richard's Almanac. I've still got all those. It's great to go back and look at some of those great ideas and everything that you were drawing. Do you find that you have less time to illustrate than you did before?
I haven't drawn a picture since 1991.
Okay.
After drawing 10,000 hands,
10,000.
I gave up. I said, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm tired of sitting in a dark room drawing. So I haven't drawn in a long time. I used Tone Onosaka for years, and also Earl Oakes for many years. Earl just died at age 88.
Yeah.
We use photographs in Genie now, color photographs, and in the books I'll do in the future, they'll also probably have photographs.
And have you had any problem with digital thievery?
Oh, sure. There's everything I've published and everything everybody's published is up on BitTorrent sites all over. But I employ a guy who exclusively for me does digital takedowns of all my stuff constantly. He take it down, they put it back up. He takes it down, they put it back up. But it's, it's well worth the money and encourages people to purchase from us directly.
Ethically.
Yes.
And then you started the Genie Forum about 5 years ago, roughly?
Oh, no, in 2001, so talking about 13 years ago.
Yeah, okay, time flies.
Yeah, we were pretty early in there with an internet discussion group, and now we have also Genie Forum is ongoing, as is Magicpedia, which is a wiki, like Wikipedia, but exclusively for magic, and I think it's the biggest one on the internet right now. So we have a pretty good thing going, big internet presence, digital magazine, all the back issues are available digitally.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the print issue. So it's a big enterprise.
That's great. And since this is the 75th year, this is exciting. I want you to tell me, I know that we've had some tremendous talent, obviously, here, you know, with people we brought in from all over the world, like Christian Engblom and Danny D. Ortiz and others. But I know that you've got some international performers are also coming.
Well, it's the 75th anniversary of Genie, and no better time to throw a big party.
Yeah, exactly.
And
a lot of candles on the cake.
Yeah, well, the cake will fall apart from 75 candles. So it's October 4th, 5th, and 6th in Orlando, Florida. And we have Juan Tamariz doing a 2.5-hour presentation on Friday night, a 1-hour show followed by a 90-minute lecture.
Wow.
Uri Geller is doing his first ever lecture at a magic convention in the United States, 90-minute lecture with demonstrations.
Do you think, is this lecture going to be more kind of talking about his life, or is he going to be teaching things? Or?
Oh, he's... just gives a fantastic lecture. You'll have to come see it.
A little surprise.
No, it's not. It's not biographical.
Okay.
It's not biographical.
I'd love to hear what
it's
him talk.
It's a performance. Well, you will, and anybody who comes to the convention will have the chance to get his autograph and be photographed with him, and maybe even get a spoon autographed. We booked Guy Hollingworth to do probably the preeminent sleight of hand artist of the past 20 years. He's going to do a 90-minute show and lecture.
He had that wonderful show of Expert at the Card Table.
Yeah, but this is not...
No, I'm just saying that he
But this is a close-up show, and then followed by a lecture. We also have Max Maven, Alba, Paul Wilson, Peter Samuelson, David Benn, FISM second-place winner Lucas, Jamie in Swiss, Ian Kendall, Tomo Maeda from Japan, Rob Zabrecki, the AMA Stage Magician of the Year, Bob White, Roberto Jobi, Tom Stone from Sweden, Michael Weber, Eugene Berger, Jonathan Pendragon, who will be newly married at the time, John Armstrong, Jonathan Levitt, Eric Mead, Jim Steinmeier doing a doubleheader back-to-back lecture, two lectures, Alex Ramon, Dr. Sawa is coming from Japan to
do his
seashell magic, John Rockebauer, Charlie Fry, Scott Land will do his wonderful marionettes, FISM winner Yumi, John Carney, Christian Engblom, Woody Aragon, Sonny Fontana is going to do a new act.
Shadowography thing?
No, not shadowography. A brand new act.
Okay.
And we have, I think, 32 performers.
Wow.
3 full days. Starts at noon on Thursday, October the 4th. We have a early bird dealer's night on Wednesday, October the 2nd. And the $350 registration fee includes an enormous gift bag folio. The folio has been donated by my friend David Copperfield in honor of Genie's 75th anniversary. And it's going to be filled with about 25 tricks. It'll include 8 DVDs, 4 booklets, a deck of cards, a magic set, 5 card tricks, just tons and tons of stuff. Really going to be a memorable four days. And we also on the Sunday, which is the 7th, have private workshops, extra charge workshops with Juan Tamariz and Michael Weber.
And you say those are extra...
Those are extra charge events.
And they can purchase tickets online at?
Everything is available. Registrations are available at genieconvention.com. G-E-N-I-I convention.com. Our convention hotel, the Florida Hotel and Conference Center, which is attached to the Florida Mall, the largest mall in Central Florida, is sold out. The convention hotel is sold out. However, there are 3 hotels a 5-minute walk down the road, a Hampton Inn, a Quality Inn, and a Red Roof Inn, all of which are just a few minutes walk away and in some cases less expensive than the convention hotel. And we are hoping and expecting to sell out. So if you want to come, please register soon.
And it's just around the corner, literally, just
a month away. Yep.
And so what is the sellout point? Are you looking...
700
people.
Yeah, the room we have at the hotel.
You're packed to 700, can't hold any more than that.
Can't hold any more than that. And we're building a theater inside the hotel. So we'll have a full stage.
Well, that'd be nice.
Big video screens, plasma monitors in the audience. Plus, we're building raked seating at 12 inches, 24 inches, and 36 inches, so people won't be seated flat on the floor.
Right.
Everybody will be raked. Everybody will be able to see clearly. Everybody will be able to hear. We have a big deal. Dealers room with, I think, over 30 dealers from around the world.
What about the close-up shows then also? Will they be heavy tiered also? Are you going to have several going, I mean, rotating?
No, no. We're doing pretty much everything in the one big room.
Okay.
I don't think close-up performers do particularly well when they have to repeat the same show four, five, six, seven times in a row. I think that it's much better to have them do one superb performance that everybody sees.
I've always thought it'd be kind of a cool idea that if you could use just a closed circuit television, so that way people could even be in their rooms.
Yeah, it's even if you're in a large room and somebody's doing close up magic and you're watching the screen in order to see it, you're still all in the same room and you're still in the same room as the performer, so you still get that energy of being part of the group and the energy of being in the room live with the performer.
Right. And this is the first time that you've actually tried to put on a convention?
Yes.
And you've been in conventions. You've attended in various capacities over the past. So you're learning a lot, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm learning too much.
You're learning probably not to do this again.
Well,
maybe another 75 years.
We'll never be 75 again. Yeah. And I won't be alive when we turn 100, so I don't have to worry about that.
Oh, man. No, I think that'd be the next one. That'd be a great benchmark.
Well, by then, by the 25 years, there'll be no such thing as a printed magazine or book.
What do you think about that, by the way? Do you think that, what is the future of print mags?
There is no future. Mm-hmm. The future is digital. I will continue to supply a printed magazine to my readers as long as I can find a short-run printer to produce it. But eventually all those short-run printers will go out of business, and there'll be no choice. But I foresee that as being at least, 8 to 10 years in the future.
That soon, even?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, do you think that also before that happens that there'll be, what would I say, maybe cannibalizing, I guess, in other words, that we may have, see some magazines, let's say like the MUM acquiring the Linking Ring or vice versa, or some merging of organizations?
Well, there'll be some consolidation. I mean, the magic as a field is contracting. There's a lot of attrition. Older people are dropping out or dying or retiring, and not as many new people are coming in. So there will be a contraction in the field. However, the move to digital is inevitable. They've already sold 60 million iPads. That doesn't count all the Android tablets and all the smartphones and the Samsung Galaxies and all that stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, people want to be able to read stuff wherever they are. They want to be able to have 1,500 books on their iPad. You know, that's just the way it is. Plus, the good thing is that it allows us to embed audio and video in the digital edition, of which we do quite a bit.
And you're embracing that already, yeah.
Oh, yeah, at least an hour each month of audio and video, and we hope to do more as time goes by.
So do you have any plan then necessarily? Well, let me just break for a minute here. It looks like you might have some customers. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks.
Sure. Hello. Well, great. Get another sale. I was going to take a break.
I just took a nice subscription. I'm very happy. A nice young boy and his mother. She subscribed for him. I think he'll enjoy the Genie very much.
I think so, too. And so, again, talking about the digital age, I was saying that you're preparing for that with everything that you got going then right now. So you're thinking within the next 10 years you're going to...
I will continue to publish a paper magazine as long as there is the printer who will print it. But eventually, everything will be digital.
Yeah.
Books, there's such a thing as print on demand.
Yeah, like Lulu.
Yeah, but you can't do print on demand for magazines. The business model doesn't exist. It costs too much. And people are slowly, making the transition over to digital magazines.
Sure, even like in the newspapers. I mean, USA Today and New York Times and everything.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's just inevitable. And we've taken the tack that our digital people who subscribe to Genie are entitled not just to the print edition, but also to the digital edition. They've already paid to subscribe. You shouldn't have to pay again to get the digital edition. And this is the same business model as Sports Illustrated, Wired, the New York Times, the New Yorker. Many, many magazines follow the same thing. If you subscribe to the print edition, the digital edition is free.
Yeah, that seems fair. That's more than fair. That's a great deal that you got going then.
Yep.
All right. Well, so as I said, you are going to be producing this 75th with really no plan, I guess, for a repeat. I wouldn't imagine.
No. I'm just hoping that I can maintain my sanity over the course of the next 30 days until the convention starts, and that I'll have a little time to actually enjoy some of it while it takes place.
Have you got a good committee, I guess, helping you and all that?
No, it's just me.
Oh, man. And, how do you do that, Richard?
I don't sleep very much.
I guess not.
No, I'm doing
I think
you'd
be a lot more gray. You know, I don't see gray up there.
That's a lot of gray. Anyway, so as soon as convention's over, get the next issue of Genie done, and then I'm going to take a little vacation.
Well deserved.
And then it's back to normal again as we enter our 76th year, starting in January.
What's vacation for you? What do you like? What's your
me?
Yeah,
oh,
you
I
like
go.
Fish
I go to Japan.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Very fun. Okay, well, as we start to close out over there, and I sincerely appreciate your time, that what is your magic word? The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So, I mean, what is a credo that you live by? Or, you know, what is Richard Kaufman's magic word or phrase?
Give your customers what they want.
That's good. You've lived that for a long time.
Yeah.
Yes. Excellent. Richard Kaufman, thank you very much. Good luck with the convention and the direction of wherever the Genie will go. And I'm sure it's going to be successful for many, 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 many years in the future. And don't forget to subscribe today.
Yep. GenieMagazine.com.
That's it.
Thank you.
That's Richard.
That's
Scotty out. Well, it's about a little close to 2 in the morning here, so I guess we're getting into day 4 of the TAOM unofficially and kind of just hanging out, and I'm here with Chip Romero. Hello, Chip.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you this evening? Having a great time?
Having a great time.
At the convention and ever since Friday night. I mean, you were on early, so that way that afterwards you can just kind of chill the rest of the time.
Could chill and hang with all my friends.
Yep.
Lots of nice things happening at the convention. The shows were great. Well received. Beautiful, great. And magically, one of my favorite moments was Chad Long's lecture.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it. Very entertaining for us magicians, but also stuff that we can use. Really enjoy Danny DeOrtez. I love his style. I wish I could perform like that. It's amazing to me.
Just so frenetic. Well, you know, it's interesting that both those guys have a similar style, so I can see why if you like one, you got to like the other one.
Just,
you know?
Just loved them. Just loved them. They're very disarming. Their demeanor, the way they work, is a lesson to be learned.
Well, that's got a very good point. In fact, I think that they are so frenetic and just kind of crazy that you can get away with a lot more stuff. You know, of course, now Danny's doing a lot of knuckle-busting stuff as well, but he wouldn't necessarily need to. He can do, like, you know, Billy McComb type of stuff that may be kind of easier, I guess, that you wouldn't have to. It's all about the presentation.
Well,
you work about just trying to entertain them.
Well, Danny didn't do a side steal or a pass.
Well, that's true.
It was all subtle and all in his demeanor and how he worked, and that's what made him special. Very, very little sleight of hand. It was all about the guy doing all the talking.
Yeah,
and that's what was fun.
Yeah, but that evening show, you know, he closed tonight's show with a close-up presentation. They had cameras and they had about 20 people up on stage over there, and the trick he did where he had half a dozen people at the table all select a card, and then they just went through some crazy antics. Everybody had shuffled the cards or they had a signed card, and then someone named a number, and then they all counted down. They all came to the same card. That's the basic trick itself, but the journey was so fun, and there was no blow off. I mean, it was crazy, man.
It didn't feel like a 7-minute build limit.
Oh no,
where you have to wait 7 minutes to get to the effect.
Yeah,
even though the effect did take 7 minutes to get to.
Yeah,
it was entertaining and fun and playful all the way, and of course he knew how to really sell that ending.
Oh yeah, there's no question about that. So those were a couple of your highlights and favorites of the convention over there.
Well, my show was great.
Of course it was.
But you ought to see it from my side. 70% sock, 30% me, and 5% suit. But we had a blast. And thanks a lot for asking me to be here.
You're welcome. And I think it all turned out great. I thought a nice, tight show. It was really just you and Bob Smith. And so some funny stuff, both with good gags, because we had an agenda to get to. We had to get to the stage contest. And so
who were all wonderful?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You know, I think with the $5,000 that they they were offering in cash prizes, that that really brought out a lot of good talent, not only for Sage, but close up that as well. And which, by the way, I think we should state that it was Michael Dardant, or Dardant, from New Orleans, who took $3,000 home for his close-up. Did you see the close-up show at
another,
all?
I missed that one part,
yeah.
But I'm aware of him, and that's another Louisiana boy.
Yeah.
So
that's, nearby.
So once again, the TAOM has taken in another Louisiana boy and made him feel good.
Made him good, yes. Yeah. And then, let's see, then second, who came in second? Goodness, I don't remember this evening who got the second prize. Somebody got $1,500, another guy got, I think it was Danny Garcia, who was not the president this year, but another guy, D-A-N-I.
Danny Garcia,
that
won.
Garcia,
yeah, that's right.
And he did a close-up show, and he got $500. He came in third, and his act was a linking pretzel act that was very entertaining, very fun, and funny, and he didn't talk a lot. He is from Mexico, I believe, and so so he had some music and some sound like flamenco type music that he had recorded. Anyhow, it was just a great act. Darn if I can not remember. Jamie, who was it that got second prize at the 1500?
T.J. Ketchmark.
That's right, Ketchmark. He was the guy who had the parasol act
right.
in the stage contest.
Right.
Now, Jamie Sleens, by the way, here, who is the was the stage... Well, actually, you were the contest chairman for the convention.
For the cash prize, yes, and the contest chairman and all other assigned duties.
Whatever that it takes.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, trash picker-upper on stage for Mr. Garcia and whatever.
Yeah. So what were some of your highlights? What's kind of a wrap for you? What do you think?
Well, I can't really remember too much because I've been going on, 4 hours of sleep in 3 days? So I'm kind of loopy right now, as you can tell. And it's only had one beer, so it's more the lack of sleep than the
yeah,
one
you had
beer.
A full pizza.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have a full pizza. I only had one slice. But I had a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, the contest was well run, and I thought they had some good contestants, and everything worked out pretty well. And yeah, TJ Ketchmar was pretty good. How old was he, by the way? Or is he?
He is under 18, so my guess is I think he's like 16 or 17.
Yeah, I didn't know if he was driving age, you know, yet, but he was a winner also in St. Louis at the Midwest Magic Jubilee, then I know.
Tell you what, Scott, we also have to talk about Danny Cole.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Danny Cole, what an amazing act, but I got to tell you, this is just me, all right? I like an act that doesn't mess around. When he began the CD segment, which I'm going to name Strike Up the Band,
okay.
I thought it was amazing how he produced all the instruments from the CDs. And I've already talked to probably 5 or 6 people. We all feel the same way. His winter time in China, it looked like he was standing in the middle of a burst of fireworks.
It
was absolutely beautiful. It looked symmetrical the way the lights hit.
Did.
Whatever he's using, don't give it up, Danny. Don't give it up. Whatever you're using, my Lord, it looked like you were standing in the middle of a fireworks going off. It was absolutely beautiful.
I thought the same thing. I've never seen a snowstorm in China, you know, like that. I mean, I've seen, you know, the kinds of glitter or, you know, confetti or whatever. But there was something about that. And the way the spotlight hit it, you're right, it lit up the whole stage. It was like it was coming around him. It was like it almost had dropped from
it almost looked like a bubble to me.
Yes.
Just the way the spotlight, the circle of the spotlight.
Yes. Yeah.
It looked like a bubble. It looked like he was in the middle of fireworks to me. I just thought it was beautiful.
But the whole rest of the act, you know, I've not seen Danny's full show, you know, like that. I've just seen some bits and pieces and promo stuff. I've not seen it on YouTube. But, he just rocked the house. I thought.
Thoroughly wonderful.
Got a standing ovation,
wonderful.
You know, for the act. Danny
got two standing ovations.
That's right. He actually did.
Danny Gold got two standing ovations because the brothers jumped up before he was done.
Yeah. Okay.
And then when he was done, we all jumped up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you go.
That was just, I would highly recommend for him for any other conventions if you're lucky enough to get him. I think he did us a special favor, you know, to come in just because of the relationship that he has with, Danny Garcia. And so that's great. Which was another thing, you know, I think we have to, you know, certainly give credit to Danny and Alex because these guys do have these relationships and been around the world and know these guys. They can kind of have them call in favors. Kind of like, you know, Stan Allen in Vegas. You know, he's got all the guys, and he just says, I got some favors. Can you help me with this or that? And all these guys are out there and helping. It's kind of the same way here.
Danny and Alex did do a stellar job with Close Up.
Goodness, yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be hard to match it.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to match it. We had a lot of stars out there today.
Well, now, speaking of which, now you just gave us kind of a taste of what you're doing here. But next year you're going to be doing a much larger show in Dallas with ATO. Tell us about something if you can.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been sworn to secrecy.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be unreal. We're bringing some of Doug's illusions. We're going to perform some
Doug
of Doug's
Henning.
Illusions.
Yeah.
Doug Henning, it's going to be a big tribute to Doug Henning. Mark Jensen and Dal Sanders started talking to me about this over 2 years ago. There's going to be a lot of Doug's equipment on to be viewed. Going to perform some of Doug's effects, do a big talk on Doug. And right now, it's looking very positive. We're probably going to get Gene Anderson to do a talk on how he taught Doug the newspaper.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
And then I'm going to show some of Doug's illusions, perform the sands. We're probably going to do the shadow box. And we're all going to do it in front of Doug's backdrop. It's going to be a pretty big deal for Mr. Doug Henning.
I got a trivia question for you then also that I know you know the answer to it. And that is, what was the first close-up trick that opened up one of Doug Henning's shows?
Well, that would have to be the Fickle Nickel,
yep,
by Mr. John Cornelius, who is here.
He's around. San Antonio, that's right. I just saw him just a moment ago. He was near the bar. And that's right. Yep. I thought that was pretty cool. I remember buying that. He probably sold a ton of those things after that his Doug Henning special came out.
I still have mine in the envelope.
Yeah, do you?
I really do. That and his vanishing cigarette.
Okay.
When I first started coming to the TAOMs, that's when John was very, very prevalent.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's still prevalent, but what I'm saying is when he was running, was constantly working them, that was his big thing, that vanishing cigarette that just fooled us all.
Yeah.
And then also the Fickle Nickel.
Yeah.
I mean, we're also his photograph act, or his light act, but the point is that
I had gone to San Antonio, and I was visiting with him. I called him up and didn't know him, really. I hadn't met him at conventions, and I just called and said, hey, I'm in San Antonio on some other business, and I wanted to come by and buy the Fickle Nickel. Yeah, come on by, you know. And I spent about a half hour, you know, with him, and it was fun. It was the first time I met him, you know, and just a great guy. And he is one of the fellows also who's kind of part of the fabric of the TAOM. We've just got a grand and glorious heritage, I think, you know, here.
Well, he's iconic.
Yeah.
He's iconic. He taught me the coin through the glass door with the muscle pass.
Oh,
I'll never
right?
forget that. I've been doing that over 20 years, where you throw the glass or throw the coin through the glass door, just put the muscle pass right in your hand.
Right.
Well, John showed me that, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's funny. So, this is a good convention where you have an opportunity to kind of see these kinds of guys and chat with them and share ideas, you know, as far as learning, you know, new tricks like that you have, you know, there then too. And I think it's important that, you know, guys continue to come out to and support conventions. You know, I was just talking, had a conversation in there with Christian Schenck and Losander and some of the other guys and saying that, you know, it seems like with the attendance coming down and down with a lot of conventions, you know, what are people doing? You know, a lot of people are dying off, and as far as, you know, the next generation, that they're not really attending the conventions, and so we need to have something more like this. This has been a good mix, I think, of young and old.
It's been very, very nice, and something that the young kids need to know is there's nothing like standing there and talking to the person other than looking at them over a computer.
Or seeing them on YouTube.
I know where the future's going, but the fact is, when you're able to just sit with somebody and talk, the conversation is able to breathe and grow. It's not just you watching somebody talking on a TV. It's much better to be able to ask questions and move that conversation around more to what you need.
Right. You say you do know where the future is going?
I do know what?
You do know where the future is going? You say
the future is headed towards magic conventions on laptops, everybody sitting at home.
Oh, okay.
It's starting now.
Well, I was just had a conversation talking with Richard Kaufman about the future of the magazines. He said, I believe it'll all be digital within 10 years. He said, I'm going to print as long as there is a you know, print companies or publishing companies that will continue to print. But I said, I think realistically that there are going to be more and more digital editions of magazines, and that's where we're going to be going.
I totally agree, and I'll tell you something interesting that Mike Caveney told me. He said, you know, when I get my magazine, my paper magazine, he says, you know, it lays around. He goes, I sort of look at it all throughout the month. I read it. He goes, when I get a digital magazine, he goes, I look at it once and I don't look at it again. So that's really interesting. I guess it's nice to be able to archive that stuff on hard drives, but
I don't know, maybe the younger generation is enjoying, I mean, I'm sure they are. They're pushing buttons. They have cell phones. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless all the technology they have, because they're better than we were when we were younger. That's the God's honest truth. My friend Kyle, my student, is 15 years old, and he reads Erdnase. I didn't even know what Erdnase was when I was 15.
Yeah,
So the information is there.
Sure.
I do think they're better than us. I just think there needs to be more one-on-one personal interaction where you can, because these guys, they're all about YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And that's not personal interaction.
That's right.
And I mean, I know that the future might go that way, but man, try to be personal with your audiences, because, okay, I'm going to tell a quick joke. A little guy came to my house. He's published. He has stuff on Illusionists.
Okay.
And I said, hey, it's a pleasure to meet you. Wow. Welcome to my house. He was looking at all the books and everything. He's like, this is incredible. And I said, well, man, show me what you published. And he took out his iPhone to show me his trick. Now, if anybody knows me, I have no filter. And I went, hey, man, I'm right here.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And he said, got a baggie? And I'm like, man, please. Imagine, you're supposed to show me the trick right here.
Yeah.
So in the future, I honestly believe that they're going to be two young guys, and she's going to have their iPhones going, well, I did this and I did this. Yeah. And they're going to be showing each other magic tricks on iPhones.
Yeah.
Now, that's not what magic should be. That's all I'm going to say. That's a little scary.
Yeah, it is. But carrying that just into another industry, I was at a Christmas party with musicians, and it was kind of interesting, you know, and talking about, you know, similar types of things with agents and getting shows and, you know, different gigs you work and clients and that kind of a thing. However, that when they were talking about their music, you know, when we promote ourselves through the websites, through YouTube or whatever, that we would have tricks, that what they have as digital business cards now are basically CDs that they will give mini discs with, like, not just a few songs, but like all songs, you know, or a song, you know, the whole song, and saying, you know, here it is, so you can hear the whole song of what we do. And then, I mean, they were handing them out like candy. Basically, it's like, here. So I'm saying is that, you know, this is like a new digital direction, I think, for entertainers, perhaps, to have something that you're going to be letting potential clients know what you can do by giving them, you know, you would carry your iPhone, hey, watch me. Or you might just, in the future, might be some sort of digital thing that will have that already built in. You hand to them the little digital phone or whatever. They keep it, you know. The price will come down.
But it'll also still be the website.
Yes, yes.
I mean, obviously. When you and I had to send videotapes to work Magic Island.
Oh, yeah.
Now what do you do? Hey, ScottWells.com, ChipRomero.com, and there's your video. I mean, it's technology's wonderful.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, anyhow, we're just kind of going to wrap up over here. And let me ask you then, Chip, first of all, I just think we're probably going to wrap up the convention with this then as well. It has been a great convention. I thank you very much. But the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? Not necessarily what you would use on stage or whatever. It may or may not be, but maybe a credo, your catchphrase, your philosophy of life, you know.
Wait, philosophy of life? That's very broad.
Yeah, I know it is, but is there a word?
My magic word, we'll see if they figure it out, would be now.
Now? I've not had anybody give me that.
But figure out who said it. And
you just did.
No, that's my magic word, but I don't know if that's my philosophy of life. It certainly seems that way. So my magic word would be now!
I like it. That was Chip Romero. And from the Texas Association of Magicians 2012 in Houston, Texas, I think that's probably going to be enough. Scotty out.
Hey, Scotty here again. Do you have a thought, comment, or suggestion for this podcast? Would you like to have these podcasts longer, shorter, or are they just right? Are there questions that you'd like for me to ask some people during my chats? Do you like the format of my podcasts, and are they easy to download and hear? Post your comments on the Magic Word blog or through iTunes. Or you can send me a direct private message to scott@scottwells.com. You've heard from me. Now I look forward to hearing from you. Scotty out.